From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. It's the weekly program on topics of health, fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Tim Henney. Today in the program, we have our monthly arts and culture segment. This month, we feature the Latino Arts Festival coming to the Park City Library on June 3rd. Max Ventura from the Christian Center is the event organizer. He'll be joined by Hadley Dynack of the Park City and Summit County Arts Council, and they'll talk about how art can bring culture together.
And then we're joined by local author and former corporate lawyer turned life coach and what she calls soul hacker. It's Eve Picard. She'll join us to talk about how to find and pursue your life's purpose.
Finally, an incredible story about a blind mountain bike racer, Bobby McMullen. Coming on Thursday, May 4th, at the Jim Santee Auditorium, the National Ability Center and the Park City High School mountain bike team present a film called The Way Bobby Sees It. Bobby will be in town for the screening and is a pretty cool guy. We'll be joined by the National Ability Center bike program manager, Steve Robinson, to talk about this astonishing person.
This is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back after these words from our underwriters.
G'day. This is Ian from Campos Coffee, a proud KPCW sponsor. Our first winter in Park City was awesome. Thanks for accepting us into our community. We're open for breakfast and lunch every day during the mud season. We're just above the ice rink at Park City Mountain. CamposCoffee.com.
This is Dr. Phil Davidson of Davidson Orthopedics, Park City resident and KPCW fan. Our practice specializes in offering a wide array of solutions for knee and shoulder problems. More information is available on our website at DavidsonOrthopedics.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. This month, our segment on the connection of arts and culture to our mountain lifestyle is curated by the Park City Summit County Arts Council. Today, we focus on how the arts help build community and bring people together. We'll highlight the upcoming second annual Latino Arts Festival, which will occur on June 3rd from 3 to 8 p.m. at the Park City Library. The event is produced by the Christian Center of Park City in partnership with a number of other local groups, including your very own KPCW, the Park City and Summit County Libraries, the Sundance Institute, and the Park City Summit County Arts Council. The festival is designed as a celebration of culture through food, dance, artwork, and film. It's also a fun and colorful way to bring our diverse communities together to interact with one another and the heritage, traditions, and creativity of our Latino community. Maximo Ventura is the Latino Outreach Coordinator for the Christian Center of Park City and the visionary behind the Latino Arts Festival. He joins us along with Hadley Dynack of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lynn. Yeah.
Thanks for inviting us. We're so glad that you could come. And this is the second annual Latino Arts Festival. Last year, you were so excited about it. And your excitement about this year is palpable. It's bigger.
Oh, definitely.
Tell us, what was your vision behind creating this?
Well, Lynn, Tim, Hadley, we want to invite all the people, we, who make up our community, to enjoy and engage with the beauty of multiple art expressions whose authors have embraced their heritage, Hispanic or Latino, as a way of transmitting a cultural experience, that lasts for generations.
Mm. So Latino and Hispanic, I love that you bring that up because there is a distinction, and maybe you could talk about what that distinction is. When we refer to Latino, who are we referring to?
All the people who make up Latin America, and Hispanic is all those who speak Spanish, regardless the place or the country they're coming from.
Okay. So in amongst all the the artists that will be presenting at the Latino Arts Festival. Who do we have? Where are they from?
Absolutely. That's an excellent question, Lynn. Because, as you know, around 25 to probably more percent in our community are from Latin America. And the majority are from Mexico. And last year I received a compliment from someone who said, that Mexican show, our show was amazing. And I told her, you know, it was actually Latin American event. And that's what we want to make sure that people understand, that we are bringing artists from multiple part of the Latin America.
Yeah.
And does the artwork, Max, does it have a focus? I thought you said when you were introducing it that it ties into culture and heritage and the background of where these artists come from. So is there a connection to what they're expressing, or could they express anything? Could it just be could it be a Latino artist who paints a Park City landscape? That doesn't really tie into their heritage.
Good question. Excellent question, Tim. Wow, what a wonderful question, actually. This is a quick example. For example, Ruby Chacon, who has displayed her artwork already at the library, and she'll join us the day of the event. She was born in the States, in the United States, and her family has been in the United States for generations, but her background mainly are from Mexico. But if you see her artwork, regardless where she was born, you see that heritage, you see that particular mark, signature in every single inch of her paintings. So Latin America is all about families, it's all about color, it's all about culture and heritage, and you'll see that signature in every aspect of the art show we're going to present, but you'll see the heritage and the Latino in every, regardless what type of art.
Right.
So, good question.
Yeah. And I noticed that the venue's different this year. Is that because of the construction going on at the Christian Center, or is it because the event has grown enough that you need a larger venue to display? Yeah. To exhibit?
Both, actually. So we are under construction, and actually the event has grown to the point that we will need probably next year another a bigger venue, or a split the event into 2 days.
And you're also incorporating film this year.
Absolutely. So Sundance Institute has joined our vision, and through their community screening, they'll bring a film about Cesar Chavez, who fought for immigrants' rights, and it's going to be actually the director will join us the day of the event too for Q&A.
That's great. How long? I've heard of the film before, and it seems as though a lot of it's been distributed in a widespread fashion because a lot of people have seen it. I haven't seen it though. It's called Caesar's Last Fast. There we go.
It was here at Sundance in 2014.
Okay.
And Sundance Institute has helped incubate it at its various stages of development. So it's really fun to be able to bring it here as it's completed and made its rounds to kind of share again with our community.
Okay. And so the idea of the Arts Festival is going to be that people come to the library between 3 and 8, and there will be sort of various things going on at different times. There'll be the art. And the art, as I understand, will be throughout the library, the first, the second, the third floor. It'll be hung, displayed, and then there will be music, there will be food, there will be film. So take us through what it's going to look like if I show up at 3 p.m.
Exactly. Art is very wide, and anything can be art. Even a good coffee, it's a piece of artwork. However, we are focusing on five different aspects of art, which are painting and music, live music, food, folkloric dance, and a film.
And how is that displayed? As Lynn was saying, the artwork is through the library at different floors, inside the library or in the hallways on the exterior?
The whole life, we're taking over the
whole building. Life.
So, and I forgot to mention, so painting along with pottery, metal artwork, and there's this Colombian a guy who will bring directly from Colombia, from native Colombians, a handicraft, a artwork. It's just amazing.
How nice.
Yeah, and it brings together, just to add to what you were just saying from hearing your vision, Max, you know, more contemporary work with more traditional work. So some of the pieces that Max is talking about around textiles or fabrics or metal work are more traditional craftsperson, artisan pieces. And then, you know, we have the paintings and we have some amazing photography. Actually, you should talk about the photography exhibit about Nicaragua, because I think that's really incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. We have Gene, I forget his name, but I have it right here. His name is Jean Carlos Mendieta. He's from Nicaragua, an excellent photographer. He captured living traditions. He captured live artwork. He captured people's lives and families. You'll enjoy her photographs.
Excellent. You know, I think there's a big push right now in our community to learn more about our Latino culture and our Latino, the part of our community that is so important is, you know, as they say, 22 to 25% of our community is made up of Latino residents. And, you know, we want to know more about who makes up this community and what they're about. Do you feel that as a sort of a growing movement in your position, Max, at the Christian Center?
We have received our, and I'm referring to the whole Latino families. We have received a great support from the local residents and from Park City in general. So I think that it's growing, and we're glad and happy to be able to put this together.
So. There's, you know, Max and Hadley, there's what Lynn is hitting on is really interesting to me, because there's that idea of integrating and blending the cultures. And I know that we're looking at art and the role that it plays in doing just that. And so, you know, Max, you say the Latino community has received great support in the community, and that support continues and maybe even grows. But it's support that's meeting people at their point of need. And where do we meet people and blend those cultures, not at a point of need through sort of a safety net support system, but an expanded system and a system of bringing them together in more abstract ways and cultural ways? And what are you seeing on that front?
Well, I think this event is really extraordinary because it's about celebration. It's about bringing people together and having a connected community experience that is not about need. It's about connection. You know, when you engage with art, it's not a solitary experience. And, you know, it can break down the us versus them mentality and really help us think about the we and think about the collective. So I am thrilled to be able to support what the Christian Center is doing with this, because I do really think that, you know, when you come to an event and you sit down next to somebody that you don't know and you learn about them and say hello and immerse yourself in the art and the beauty and the color of our Latino population and our Latino cultures, it builds something greater than the whole and helps us, you know, kind of celebrate and recognize who we are as a community that we often don't acknowledge or talk about as much as we can. And so this event really helps promote conversation and connection and new ideas.
And the fact that this event is in its second year and wasn't happening prior to last year kind of speaks to that exact point of celebrating the positives and not kind of only taking care of the need. There's something about that. I mean, is that an example of where we are as a community, that we have the, we have this great benefit of being able to go into more expansive places like art and culture and not just focus simply on the need? Or is that just sort of a bourgeois thing where, hey, we're Park City, we're entitled, we take care of people and we do this art and culture thing? I mean, I tend to wonder, you know, if it's really important and is an example of kind of an evolution of the community.
I don't know. I mean, I think that that everywhere you look, you know, that's one of the things that arts can do, is it can really inspire change and bring people together. And so I wouldn't say it's a either or. I would say that it's part of the fabric of who we all are as people and, you know, as civilization. And so if you look at like the Living Traditions Festival that the Salt Lake Arts Council does, that's a 3-day festival that's been going on for years. Over 90,000 people come. And I think it's not just about a party and a celebration, but it's just a fundamental representation of all of the different cultures that we have in our community. So I would not say that it's bourgeois at all. I think it's a critical and essential and a complement to everything that we stand for as a community.
I think one of the greatest gifts that we can find for ourselves and for our community is to find the parts of other communities and other cultures that speak to us that don't occur naturally. And when Max said in the beginning of the interview, he said, there's so much color and there's so much focus on family. And I feel that different community, like you look towards another community or another culture to grasp those things that they so readily exhibit, that just kind of come out, that exude, you know, that just kind of spring forth from that community. And for sure, the Latino, you know, the family, focus on family, the color, the passion, you mentioned those words. And I think that's why we seek to embrace that and bring it into our community.
Absolutely. We are a good point of view. I love it. And actually, just want to clarify something here about what a team and Hadley were saying. And not all Latinos in Park City are low income, let me tell you. And all low income are Latinos. So I'm actually in charge of the emergency assistance department at the Christian Center. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that we serve people from a variety of backgrounds.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, just want to mention, as we're talking about art, music, food, film, 2 days after the Latino Arts Festival is the beginning of a series of a Latino music festival that is also coming to town. A new thing this year, Mountain Town Music is working in conjunction with Latinos in Action, the kids at the high school, and they're putting together a Latino music festival. It'll be every Monday beginning on June 5th for the next for 5 Mondays, and that's going to be in City Park. We'll be speaking to them in a couple of weeks. They're putting it all together, and so what a great celebration.
Very interesting. We are very happy, and again, we are pleased of receiving this support from the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And Hadley, you wanted to talk about the monster
drawing rally.
Thank you. That's not monster trucks.
It's not monster trucks. It's monster as in gigantic, enormous, big, huge, colossal. Yeah. So as another demonstration of how art builds and connects community, the Arts Council is working with the Kimball Arts Center to produce the first ever Park City Monster Drawing Rally. That's on June 1st at the Kimball Arts Center from 6 to 9:30. And it's building on a model actually from a community arts organization in San Francisco called Southern Exposure, where artists are invited to come and create and draw in real time in 50-minute segments. All the artwork that they produce will be for sale for $50. And so it's a party, it's a community event, it's a way to connect local artists with people, potential collectors, to make it feel accessible to collect art and to build relationships with artists and just have a great time. So we're excited to be producing that event on June 1st.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming in, you two. We're really looking forward to it. It's June 3rd, the Latino Arts Festival from 3 to 8 p.m. at the Park City Library. The art will be displayed throughout every level of the library, but the event will be in the community room and in the Jim Santee Auditorium where the film Caesar's Last last
fast.
Fast. There we go. I was going to say last stand. Knew that wasn't right. is going to be shown. Hey, what time is the film happening?
5 p.m.
At 5 p.m. Excellent. Hadley Dynack, Max Ventura, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
And stay with us. We'll be back after these words. We're going to talk about soul hacks, finding your life's purpose. Have you found your life's purpose, Tim?
I'm working on it.
Working on it. Me too.
I'm about halfway through the hack.
Okay, stay with us.
For adventurers on a budget, the Utah Olympic Park offers a host of activities at no charge. Admission and parking are always free. Start with a tour of the Alf Engen Ski Museum and the Eccles 2002 Winter Games Museum. Best of all, come support athletes from all over the world who train at the park. Open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Details available at utaholympiclegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities and a KPCW supporter.
Hi, this is Whitney Wall from Park City Mountain and proud supporter of KPCW. This summer, Park City Mountain offers a variety of events for the whole family, including the annual July 4th celebration and fireworks, summer concert series, and weekly Wednesday Farmers Market. The full calendar of Park City Mountain events is available at parkcitymountain.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, have you ever wondered if you're really pursuing your life's purpose, or even if you're truly doing what you love? Well, I've wondered. Have you wondered? I think we're not human if we haven't wondered. Well, our next guest, Eve Picard, is a corporate attorney turned life coach and what she calls a soul hacker. She has written this wonderful book. She's a local, and she came to Park City to take some time to write this book. It's called The Soul Hacker, Soul Hacks for Success. It's divided into two main parts. The first part she'll talk about is more based on psychology and explains how and why the ego forms in childhood and how the ego disconnects us from our consciousness and our inner genius. Eve Picard, welcome to The Mountain Life. We're so happy you could be here.
Oh, I'm really happy to be here too. Thank you, Lynn.
So anytime I read something about the ego, I think it's so sort of out of our control in some ways, but it develops at such a young age and it really throws us off track for a lot of our lives, it seems.
No, absolutely, that's true. And it's such a nebulous thing. You know, I read a lot about the ego, and when you're reading kind of Freud, it's so complicated. And it's so hard to actually pin down what it is. And if you don't know what it is, you can't overcome it. So that's what my book is. It breaks it down in what I hope is an easy to understand way, what the ego is, why it forms, and how we can get rid of it and overcome it. Because it's our ego that always blocks us from being who we authentically are. It blocks us from our passions. It blocks us just being the authentic person that we are. So it always stands in our way. It helps us in childhood. There is a reason for it. And it is a, you could say, a good thing in childhood. But in adulthood, it's always going to work against us.
Interesting. Well, now you're not the first person I've heard of who has had this successful career in the corporate world and who wakes up one day, I suppose, or maybe it's a mounting feeling, and you just said, this isn't my purpose. So talk a little bit about that transition. And because I think so many of us don't know if we're really doing what our purpose is. Or how do we figure it out? How did you figure it out?
Yeah, I mean, I went into the law because I was very passionate. I mean, I guess my purpose is kind of connected to justice. Mm-hmm. I was very, very passionate about justice, but I wanted to be a human rights lawyer. But they didn't fund my law school.
Ah.
Corporate firms did. So, and it literally is selling your soul. to corporate, and that's what I did. And, you know, I got off track. Financial security was very important to me. And in corporate finance law, which I did, you have a lot of financial security. But when you're walking to the office every day and you're looking around you, you know, I was in London, working in London, and you just feel this gnawing emptiness. And it's almost like a soul death. And you see it in the faces of everybody walking down the street around you. You just think, what am I doing? You know, this cannot be all there is to life. And I lived with that for 15 years. So I'm a really slow learner. I'm not saying I've got all the answers or that my life has been perfect. But I did learn that actually tuning in to who you are, figuring out what you're passionate about, what would get you excited to get out of bed every morning, that's the only way to truly live. So that's why I made that transition. I also lost my husband, which was, why I left the law and just thought, you know, I need to do what I'm passionate about.
And Eve, what role did the ego play in that? I know in your phases, the first phase, you don't have an ego because it hasn't developed, and you're more of your true, authentic self.
Absolutely.
In the second phase of life, the ego seems to be what dominates. Mm-hmm. But the way you spoke in terms of the ego was very absolute. It's getting rid of the ego and stripping it away because it's what blocks everything. And I've heard people say, you know, the ego serves us. The ego's created to protect or to serve some purpose in our lives. And it's a means of managing. So activating the ego when it can benefit you and understanding when it can benefit you, but not having it dominate your life, not being egocentric per se.
Absolutely. I agree almost 100% with what you're saying in the function of the ego. And I think what you're saying is absolutely true when it relates to childhood. It does protect you completely. And it is a coping mechanism. It helps you manage life as a child when you don't have autonomy. Mm-hmm. So you can't use more appropriate means to reach resolution in situations. You have to cope because you don't have autonomy. So the ego, I think, is always fear-based. And it protects you when you're in a situation where you're powerless. As an adult, most of us have autonomy. We're not powerless. We don't have to use coping mechanisms. We don't have to tolerate things we don't like. Because as an adult, we have choices. So when we're an adult, the ego actually is blocking us from living consciously. It's making us slip into fear and it's protecting us and thinks it's keeping us safe, but it's actually blocking our choices and making us just cope with life when we could actually be living life from passion and not from fear.
And so to move from that stage where you're ego-dominated and egocentric, which I take it from your book is something that we all, we step
Absolutely.
From phase one into phase two.
Yeah, everybody will have an ego to some extent.
Right.
And it's not a bad thing. It's natural. It's part of being human. It isn't something that's awful. You know, I will still have some ego. Absolutely.
And so part of the trick is to how quickly we can move from stage two, ego-dominated, into stage three.
That's it.
Which is where we are striving to get to.
Yeah.
And we have to go through stage two.
You have to go through stage two. And, you know, we only get through stage two through learning life lessons and realizing that we're not actually, you know, when I was going to work every day, it wasn't really a conscious choice. It was ego-driven and it was a fear of not being financially secure. Mm-hmm. That was my driver. It wasn't from the passion of being a human rights lawyer. It was the need for the next paycheck to pay my rent, you know, so I could sustain myself, you know, and be financially secure. So it was fear-driven. It was ego-driven. Now how I live, it's from pure passion. In terms of career, writing the book was pure passion. I don't worry about the money. I know it will flow. If you're doing something you're passionate about, the money will come. At least I hope.
Well, yeah, I have to say I am picturing people listening right now as they're, you know, driving in their car to go to work or in between jobs or whatever, and say, that's all, yeah, that sounds great, but the bottom line is you ought to have fear about being able to pay your mortgage or get your kids through college or, you know, pay your medical bills. I mean, maybe it's the fear that motivates us in some way. I mean, yeah, yes, I don't really want to wake up and go to work every day. But, you know, if I didn't have that motivator, and maybe you call it fear, but maybe we can shape it into something else.
And that's what the ego does. I mean, that's how we manage our fear. We turn it into motivation. And I mean, that's what I did for much of my life. People telling me, you can't be a lawyer as a woman, you know, be a nurse, be a teacher. Yeah, nothing wrong with those professions, but I wanted to be a lawyer. And, you know, so we, and fear, I guess, trying to prove people wrong motivated me.
Yeah.
For most of my life. You know, when I was a trainee lawyer, people told me, do family law. Don't do corporate law. Women don't do corporate finance law. You won't get hired. And it's like, okay, I'm doing corporate finance law. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. So I'm not saying you can't be motivated by fear, but I find my life is a lot easier, a lot more peaceful, and a lot more joyful when I'm motivated by passion, doing something I'm passionate about and dropping the fear.
Yeah.
Because then I'm not coping with life. I'm actually just living my life.
So how do we shift from what Lynn was talking about, which are kind of the practical aspects of the system that we all live in, which is this Western culture and society and capitalism, because those challenges and concerns are real and they're practical. Mm-hmm. How am I going to pay my rent? How am I going to pay my mortgage? How am I going to put food on my table? How am I going to support my family? So how do we go from addressing those practical, possibly fear-based and motivated aspects of the lives and the system that we live in to shifting it out of that second phase to the third phase? And this is what the soul hack is about.
This is the second part of the book. We soul hack. We actually, the soul hacks are what I call self-coaching tools. So they bring us back to who we are outside of the fear, outside of the ego. And we strip away that everything that is fear-based and isn't authentically us. And then, you know, I still have to pay my rent, but I don't worry about it. It's not that you're burying your head in the sand. You are actually operating from your inner genius, your higher self, from consciousness. So you just don't see the problems. You don't see things as problems and challenges and things to worry about, because you know that you've got this. You've got everything you need inside of you when you drop the fear. And when did, you know, we're worried about paying our bills, you know, paying for our kids' education. When did worrying actually ever help?
Yeah.
You know, what purpose does it serve? We think it's serving a purpose, and it's actually just blocking us from doing something about the situation in front of us. It doesn't help. But we are such a fear-driven society. You know, I haven't watched the news for over 10 years. Because that, you know, everything we watch...
Donald Trump is president. I'm just giving you a newsflash.
Unfortunately, I know that. I know that. And I wish I didn't know that.
Couldn't help myself. Sorry.
I know.
Our guest is Eve Picard. She's the author of the book, The Soul Hacker, Soul Hacks for Success. This word hack, hacker? You know, I've heard that life hacks, this hack, that hack. What does it mean?
Well, for me, it just means, I call the ego an ego program. And I perceive the mind as being like the hardware of a computer. So I think the ego program is kind of like a faulty program that we're all running in the computer system of our mind. Mm-hmm. So when I say hack, I'm saying remove the faulty program. So that's what we're doing. It is like computer hacking. We're hacking our own mind and we're removing a faulty program that's working against us in adulthood.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you a for example, because I personally have been dealing with a lot of fear recently. Mm-hmm. So as I was growing up, I did all kinds of crazy things. I never worried about myself. Now I have two kids who are in college, and suddenly it's like I am crippled from fear and worry about whatever. It's mostly when, you know, they're going here, there, where they're driving somewhere, they're going here, they're going there. I'm worried about that kind of thing. And I think parents in general, you know, we have children and we love them so much. And I don't know when this fear worry thing kicked in for me, but I cannot stand it. I want to eradicate it. So how do I do that?
You soul hack. I think you have to come back to, you know, I worried about my husband dying. That was a huge fear for me. Me worrying about him dying did not stop him dying.
Yeah.
So that was a great lesson for me, a great life lesson. So, you know, you actually, we develop a sort of OCD, you know, obsessive compulsion disorder. We think if we worry, we're actually going to change things or control things that are not within our control. And that's all that fear is.
There's a saying about it. It's coffee for the things that I control and wine for the things I don't.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'd not heard that. but it's true, you know, and all worrying is, all this fear is our trying to control things that are not within our control. And that's actually one of my soul hacks. It's that we take responsibility. And this is the thing we don't do in our society. We don't take responsibility for the things that are within our control all the times, but we try to take responsibility and to control things that aren't within our control. You know, that's a form of insanity.
Yeah.
We cannot control things that aren't ours to control. And all the fear and worrying in the world is not going to make a difference. It's just going to make us miserable, and it's just going to disconnect us from ourselves, and it's going to make us live little lives that are such a fraction of our true potential.
So do you have a technique for recognizing what is in and what is out of our control, or is it just putting a name on it and calling it out the trick?
Well, I think it's dropping the fear so we can consciously actually see and think about what, you know, we know what's in our control. When we're in a fear state, we can't think. So no, we can't. So you have to strip away all the fear. And then it becomes really clear and obvious what is in our control and what isn't.
The book is The Soul Hacker, Soul Hacks for Success. Our guest is Eve Picard. And you're going to be at Dolly's.
At Dolly's Bookstore this Saturday coming the 6th at 2 p.m.
Excellent.
And you've written your book, so you're leaving Park City.
Yeah, basically. No. Yeah, but I will always be coming back. I just love this place. It's beautiful.
Excellent. Really nice speaking with you.
Oh, you too.
I'm going to let you know if your soul hacks work for my fear.
they will, I assure you.
Okay. Well, yeah, you do say this is the one and only self-help book you'll ever have to read. That would be nice.
If it doesn't work, I'll give you your money back.
That sounds great. Eve, nice speaking with you. Thank
too.
You.
Thank you.
And this is The Mountain Life. Stay with us. We'll be back to talk about a blind mountain bike racer who will be coming to town tomorrow to accompany the screening of a film about him. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Carolyn from Recycle Utah. Don't dump that cooking oil in your trash or drain. When cooking oil ends up in the landfill or drain, it can be harmful to our water. Recycle Utah has a solution for you. Bring your used liquid cooking oils and fats to the recycling center, and it'll be used to make biodiesel. Recycle Utah is your local nonprofit recycling drop-off center, bringing water conservation ideas to you for over 25 years, and we support KPCW.
Hi, I'm Michael Manning, the Director of Golf at Park Meadows Country Club, a proud KPCW supporter. We've planned an active season of golf events, clinics, and lessons for all players on our Jack Nicklaus course, minutes from Park City Main Street. More information at parkmeadowscc.com.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware-Peak, here with Tim Henney. We were just speaking with Eve Picard. Her book, The Soul Hacker, Soul Hacks for Success. That was really interesting. Do you think I'll read it cover to cover?
No comment. Do you have any long flights ahead of you?
I
you
do.
Seem to do well on flights.
I do.
There you go.
Taking it with me
so
this weekend.
I think
you
might accomplish that.
Great. Well, we have a couple of guests in the studio here that we're really excited to talk about. Diane Bernhardt of the Park City Mountain Bike Team, Park City High School Mountain Bike Team, part of the Utah Mountain Bike League, I believe it's called. Her son is on the Park City High School Mountain Bike Team. And also Steve Robinson from the National Ability Center. He's the Mountain Bike Program Manager and Sports Program Manager, I believe. And they're here to talk about Bobby McMullen. He is a downhill mountain bike race champion, an alpine ski race medalist, a passionate extreme sport competitor, an adrenaline junkie, and, oh, by the way, Bobby is blind. Obviously, that doesn't slow him down. He's had many other life challenges that we'll hear about in a moment, but he doesn't let that stop him either. There's a screening of a film tomorrow night at the Jim Santee Auditorium. It's brought to us by the Park City High School Mountain Bike Team and the National Ability Center. It's The Way Bobby Sees It. Diane and Steve, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is the first I have heard of Bobby McMullen, but absolutely incredible. And how did you come upon him, Steve?
Bobby has sort of been around in the action sports, extreme sports circuit for a while. And we've known about him because he's done some races like the Huntsman Cup at the National Ability Center that we host at Park City Mountain. So we've known Bobby for quite a while. But later in his life, he transitioned out of skiing and into mountain biking. And he is truly a trailblazer. There's not many people in the world who are doing what he is doing at the level at which he's doing it, at a pro level. You're right. Oh, by the way, he's blind. Pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. Just not only that, he's type 1 diabetes, loss of his vision. He's had kidney failure, years of dialysis. Two kidney and pancreas transplants, open heart surgery, and has battled an aggressive form of cancer and more broken bones than you can count on two hands. But the guy gets back on the saddle and keeps cruising. Unbelievable story.
So why don't the two of you tie in the obvious, which is what Bobby McMullen has to do with the Park City High School mountain bike team and what that has to do with the National Ability Center. Why don't you connect those dots for us?
Well, Bobby is a super inspirational sort of person. Our mountain bike team is fully supported by either donations or by dues. And more recently, we've partnered with the National Ability Center and another organization of which National Ability Center is a part is called Team Elevate. The purpose of Elevate is to bring students with varying abilities into the mainstream mountain biking group. So my son Daniel, who's visually impaired, he's legally blind, he participated in Elevate, and it was an amazing life-turning thing for him. He was a little bit trepid on the mountain bike and wasn't willing to, you know, take the hard trails, but spending just a couple three lessons with the Elevate instructors, it's sort of like he threw his bit and the reins and decided, yeah, I could do this, and decided to be on the mountain bike team.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been amazing. And then his coach said, hey, Dan, are you going to race? And he's like, oh, dude, no, I cannot race.
I'm not good enough. And she goes, it's really not about being good enough.
Yeah.
It's about whether you want to. And he did it. And it's been great. So tying, you know, I had called Bobby in early because there's not that many mountain bike people who are blind. Yeah. And got some great feedback from his partner. And we ended up, I think there's this amazing coincidence that he's coming, and it's really a great thing. And I think anybody in the community.
So the showing of this video of this documentary is a fundraiser for both the NAC and the Park City High School mountain bike team. But obviously tying it all into Bobby's story, he is coming. He's going to do a Q&A session afterwards. It's a short documentary. It's only 50 minutes long.
50
minutes, correct. And he's staying for, he's going to talk a little bit more about his story, and he's an incredible speaker. He's super engaging and super fun. So I highly recommend you guys come out, and not just to support two local great nonprofits, but to see his and be inspired by his story as you are about to get back on the trails and as the snow melts. This is a great way to kick off the mountain bike season.
And the Elevate component, is that one of the many programs at the NAC, or is it a separate program that you are working with? So, is it under the umbrella of the NAC, or is it
correct?
A
it's actually a true partnership with NICA, which is the National Interscholastic Cycling Association. That's a lot of words there, yeah.
Which is why you call it Elevate.
and we're sort of their adaptive experts, mm-hmm. and we work with coaches around the state to integrate any student, high school student, with a disability onto their mountain bike team. We want to be inclusive. It's our goal to get more kids on bikes. It's not exclusively the National Ability Centers, but we started our mountain bike program 3 years ago, and we have exploded with our veteran population, with our local population, with individuals and spinal cord injuries and the type of bikes that we have. Mountain biking has grown huge leaps and bounds recently.
And the same is true for the Park City Mountain Bike Team. Only started in 2012 with 20 students. We're up to 45, and we've got competitors on the team, but we've got people who are just out there for recreation. You know, the goal is to build that spirit of lifelong activity and to teach, you know, endurance of the body, but endurance of the mind, yeah. That sort of thing. It's been a great program.
You know, what's so interesting about our community, Park City, you know, we've got probably more Olympians per capita than just about any town. And for part of our population, you know, that motivates us. It's aspirational. But for some portion of our population, I think it's an intimidation, or it's like, I can't do that because I'm not a big athlete. And that's why I love what you guys are doing, the Elevate program. It shows you that no matter what you are afflicted with, yes, you can do it. And for the rest of us, you know, I complain about how my hips hurt, you know, and I think, I look at Bobby McMullen and I think, there is nothing that ought to stop me. When you look at someone like Bobby.
Oh, absolutely. And you just hit the nail on the head of what the National Ability Center is all about. Removing barriers. Mm-hmm. If that's a mental barrier for you, if there's a fear involved, let us work with you. We have ways around that. We have adaptive mountain bikes. One of the coolest mountain bikes we have is a recumbent. So it's off-road. It's really cushy. It's full suspension. You do use your legs, but it takes away the scare of balance. It's very balanced. It's a low bike. So it allows anybody who has a fear around getting on a two-wheeled bike and mm-hmm. has that fear that you just mentioned, that's not me, I'm not an athlete, removes that, allows them to go on some of the double track out at Round Valley and get and experience that. And maybe that's step one. And they feel successful with that. Then we can work them up to a typical bike. So we have that opportunity. So it's not just for what we typically see is or consider disability, a physical disability. If you have a barrier of any kind, we'd love to work with you.
Excellent.
And for students, the Park City Mountain Bike Team. Everyone's welcome.
Mm, that's so nice. Let's give the particulars of the movie tomorrow night.
Great.
In terms of time and cost and all that.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So it's at Jim Santee Auditorium tomorrow. Doors open at 5:30. The movie will start promptly at 6 o'clock. So please try to get there a little early. Tickets are $15. You can buy them online, or you can buy them right at the auditorium day of. the best way to get to the online where to buy them is on the Park City High School Mountain Bikes Facebook page. They built a whole event. It's public, so you can Google search it or go on Facebook and easily find it. There's a link to buy tickets there. There's also some really cool prizes and an opportunity drawing, which includes a brand new Surly fat bike, a $2,000 bike.
Whoa.
So really, if anything else, come for that. I mean,
do you have to be present to win?
You do have to be present to win. Yes, you do. Okay. We still have around 200 tickets available.
Excellent.
Well, I was just going to say, this is, you know, it strikes me as kind of another spin on what we were talking about with the arts and culture, about expanding into areas of our community and integrating areas of our community and talking about the expansion with the, I mean, I don't want to even call them disabled, but the challenged component of our demographic here in the community. As Lynn said, it's so easy to put the focus on the, you know, the elite component in that caliber, and to some people that's intimidating, but what you all are doing is expanding it to everyone and being more inclusive and broadening our participation, and it's just phenomenal. The work you're doing at the NIC is phenomenal, and Diane, it sounds like you've had great success. You know, Bobby's a trailblazer for people like your son, and
absolutely,
I'm sure your son is a trailblazer for other people and other students who are looking at what he accomplishes and are inspired by that.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for the building of confidence and enthusiasm and discipline and determination. It's powerful.
The film is The Way Bobby Sees It. It's about Bobby McMullen, blind mountain bike racer, a champion. And nothing slows him down. This is a documentary. It's about 50 minutes in length. Be screened tomorrow night, Thursday, at the Jim Santee Auditorium. Doors open again at 5:30. $15 will get you a ticket, and you can buy more tickets for the opportunity drawing after
that.
Yeah,
and if you buy the ticket, you get one opportunity drawing, but you do have the opportunity to buy more.
Excellent. Steve Robinson is the mountain bike program manager, the sports manager at the National Ability Center, and Diane Bernhardt is from the Park City High School mountain bike team. Thank you so much for joining us. What
Thank
a great
you.
Thing.
Thanks
Thank
very
you.
Much for having us.
This is The Mountain Life. We'll be right back after these words.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peake, here with Tim Henney. Wow, we had some great guests today. Max Ventura from the Christian Center organizing the Latino Art Festival on June 3rd. Hadley Dynack of the Park City Summit County Arts Council. Eve Picard, her new book, The Soul Hacker. She's a local author. That was great.
She'll be at Dolly's.
She'll be at Dolly's on
Saturday.
May, yes, which is May 6th, right? Was it 3 in the afternoon?
I think so.
I believe. Yep. I'm sure you can find it on Dolly's website, dollysbookstore.com. And then our most recent guest, Steve Robinson from the National Ability Center, and Diane Bernhardt from the Park City High School mountain bike team.
We want to thank our underwriters, Phil Davidson Orthopedics, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Park Meadows Country Club, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain, and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties.
And quickly, the question we didn't get to is, how does a blind mountain biker work with the partner? And we saw it on the trailer.
Yeah,
the partner goes ahead,
yep,
and then yells constantly back what's coming up on the trail. Fascinating. You ought to see the documentary, The Way Bobby Sees It, tomorrow night at the Jim Santee Auditorium. You've been listening to KPCW Park City. It's time now for National Public Radio News.